This is a Crestview Bible podcast. For more information, visit crestviewhutch.org.
This is why I left you in Crete, so that you might put what remained into order and appoint elders in every town as I directed you. If anyone is above reproach, the husband of one wife and his children are believers, and not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination, for an overseer is, as God's steward, must be above reproach. He must not be arrogant or quick-tempered or a drunkard or violent or greedy for gain, but hospitable, a lover of good, self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. He must hold firm to the trustworthy word as taught, so that he may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine and also rebuke those who contradict it. For there are many who are insubordinate, empty talkers, and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision party. They must be silenced, since they are upsetting whole families by teaching for shameful gain what they ought not to teach. One of the Cretans, a prophet of their own, said, "Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons. This testimony is true. Therefore, rebuke them sharply, that they may be sound in the faith, not devoting themselves to Jewish myths and the commands of people who turn away from the truth. To the pure, all things are pure, but to the defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure. But their minds and their consciences are defiled. They profess to know God, but they deny him by their works. They are detestable, disobedient, unfit for any good work." Father, let us hear your word. Let this word penetrate deep into our souls. Let it cause us and mobilize us for action. Stir up our affections for you, that we would center only on Jesus, that we would be all about him, because he is all about us, and he loved us to the point of death. And so, Spirit, do your work in us today. Open up our minds to be able to understand your word and apply it to our lives today, and that we may just know Jesus and make him known. So we pray this in his name. Amen. I work now with many new workers that go out to the field all across the world, and I train and I coach these workers that go out and are church planting all around the world, and I have that great privilege to do so. And many times they ask me, one of the common questions that they ask is, what advice, if there is one piece of advice that you would give to a new worker moving internationally, what would that one bit of advice, what would that piece of advice be? What caused you to be successful on the field, living in another culture? What was it? And so the thing that I usually tell them is I sought to be as Asian as possible. I wanted to look, to feel, to smell, to think, to act as South Asian as I could. That helped me to be effective. And so I dove into the local church there. That was our family. That was our friends. It was our everything to us. So we dove into the local church. Vivek was our pastor. He was our leader, our mentor, our guide. I remember watching and observing, very keenly watching and observing the way that they lived, even to the point where, because I wanted to talk like them, right? I wanted to have that same accent. So I'm like watching their tongues as they move their mouth. How do they make all those sounds? Like in South Asia, in one of the languages, there is actually 4 different variations on the T letter. Right, and 4 different ways you can say D. So there's ta, 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 and ta, right? Did you guys get the difference between all those T's? Right, so I would like labor to try to like, what, how are they making, what is the difference? Because there is, if you say it the wrong way, you could be saying some very bad stuff. So I would make sure that I had understood how did they form that particular T or that particular D. And I watched and I observed, and I would try to mimic them all the while, like not trying to like make fun of them. I like trying to like make fun of you by repeating back what you said, but I try to do it under my breath. I would watch every move they made, trying to see them and imitate them. And we would have other expat friends of ours, others that we would see, and we saw the difference between them and us. We didn't try to get involved in the expat community. When you get involved in the expat community, it's just like a group of people that want to complain about the culture. So it wasn't helpful for us. If I'm trying to dive in and love these people, it wasn't helpful to me to be involved with other expat communities. Other expats, they would like listen to other sermons from back home. They would log into their church services back home and like listen to their podcasts. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to listen to Vivek. Like, I'm going to only hear from him. I'm going to learn from him. I don't need to go back to my hometown churches. I tried to limit my connections to the U.S. So people thought that I was just a jerk. Like, you can't handle a long-distance relationship. I can't. I don't do long-distance relationships. And so I limited those, and so I would just dove in to the South Asian culture. And this helped me be successful. Helped me to be successful on the ground, to make those connections that were there. And maybe you guys that are implants into Kansas can kind of feel that same way, because there's some really odd idiosyncrasies of Kansas. I know that, right? I can see some people shaking their heads. So like, we eat chicken noodle soup with mashed potatoes. Like, that's just weird, right? We get obsessed about the state fair. Like, if you're living in, if you live in other cities, they don't obsess about the state fair like we do, right? And like, the world stops with the state fair. We have to cheer for the Chiefs, which right now is not so bad, but also the Royals. That can be a sacrifice, like, to have to cheer for the Royals. But, you know, like, when you want to dive into a culture, you have to see and observe and like live as the people of that area. And so when we talk about, now you're like, where are you going with this? So when we talk about centering on Jesus, last week, Phil, it was all about, we're looking at Titus to see how did Paul and this church planting team structure this church, and it was centered on Jesus. And so how do we as a church center ourselves on it, or as we would call it, to be all a culture that's all about knowing Jesus and making him known? And that's why Paul left Titus here in Crete, is to say, okay, how can you structure this church? What is it going to look like for this church in Crete to center everything they do on Jesus? And I think that the question that naturally comes in my mind is, why? Why do we need to center on Jesus? Like, why is that so important? This Jesus character, wasn't he just a guy who was born to a peasant girl in a barn in some no-name village with no credentials to his name, rejected by his own people? Even his own friends left him to be prosecuted and die next to some criminals. Yes, I want you to center your life on that guy. I want our church to be centered on him. Yes, Jesus, who is the Son of God, the one whom angels worship, the one who holds the universe together by his very word, who sits enthroned above while his enemies are a footstool for his feet. Yes, that Jesus. The Jesus who is the friend of sinners, who welcomes the hurting, the broken, the one whom demons just shudder at his name and they run away with their tail between their legs. The one who controls the wind and the waves with just a hush, who touches people and their bodies are completely healed. That Jesus. The Jesus, the one who died for the sins of the world, who broke the curse of death, who rose from the dead victoriously, the one who has the keys to the kingdom of heaven and gives them freely to those who trust him. That Jesus. Jesus, the one who is full of grace, who if you come to him will not condemn you, but he will give you life, and not just life, but an abundant life. He will set you free from the bondage of sin and death. He rescues you from a purposeless life and gives you a life with meaning and hope. This Jesus. So my question is, why wouldn't you center your life on him? Why wouldn't you? Can you find me a better one? Can you find me a better reason? Can you find me a better purpose? Is there anyone or anything else who is worthy of our praise? The choice is simple. trust Jesus and love him or die in your misery and sin and spend eternity for paying for that choice. Jesus will have the victory, and guess what? You can get in on this. Everyone can get in on this. And will you buy it today? My prayer is that you have put your life in Jesus, that he is yours, that you have made it your pursuit to know him, to follow him, to adore him, to leave everything behind and have him because he's worthy of it. He loves you, gave his life for you. But here's the issue. I know that many of you will shake your head yes, nod your head yes to all of that. You'll say yes. But we leave this room, we leave this building, we leave our own seat right when Phil says you're dismissed and you get up and you talk to your neighbor next to you, it's gone. It's left away. It's fleeting. We get into a conversation with someone about the weather and how it was 30 degrees this morning and I had to change from my sandals to my shoes and I hate that and I wish I was back in South Asia. And so we get to start on that and now it's gone. We get these distractions. We have kids coming up to us asking us a zillion questions. What are we going to do after this? What are we going to have? What are we going to eat? What's for lunch? What's going to do? Let's calm down. Or we have sufferings, right? We stand up from our chair and everything hurts. And even our own hearts will pull us away from knowing Christ. So then what do we do? How are we going to center on him? What's it going to look like? What does it look like to be constantly led by him? What does it look like for us as a Crestview to have a culture of us knowing, pursuing, having Jesus as the central, where he is central and the gospel prevails and is the answer to everything, the answer of every conversation that we have? Well, the good news is that God has given us a means of grace in others. He has given us others. 2 Corinthians, I've been meditating on 2 Corinthians recently, and 2 Corinthians 7 talks about how God comforts the downcast. And it says how he does that. It says that God who comforts the downcast comforted us by the coming of Titus. It's not some weird magical, I'm going to sit in my room and you know, hopefully this somehow happens. No, he comforts us by others, by one another, encouragement from each other. By us surrounding ourselves with that, by people that will help us be focused on the mission of prizing Christ. And this is Paul's first direction that he gives to Titus. So let's put some structure in the church that will pull us to Jesus, because like Paul, Titus, and their team, they're not going to be there all the time. So the mission's going to continue. And just like parents who have to turn their kids loose, what is the church planting team going to do here in this local church of Crete? Well, like Phil said last week, they install elders, they install leaders. And so we're gonna look more deeply into that. And if you have your notes, I have 2 points. It's great that, I guess Phil said that it's great when there's only 2. I can't guarantee that it's going to be any faster, but I have 2. And that's surrounding yourself with those who know Jesus and make him known, and what that means. Well, first of all, it's going to mean that we look to leaders who point us to Jesus. So the first point, we look to leaders who will point us to Jesus. This is verses 6-9. And we call them leaders. I'm calling them leaders and not necessarily elders because, well, Paul calls them both, elders and overseers. And it's not like an age thing. They're called overseers later in the book. And we're also not told to despise youth. Jesus was 30 years old when he led 12 people. So I don't think it's an age thing. So lest you think that elders have to be old, the New Testament will break that out of the water. But I'm just calling them leaders to kind of overarch that. And there are many names for them in the church today: bishops, shepherds, pastors, priests, presbyters, reverends, whatever you want to call them. We here at Crestview, we have elders and deacons. Elders for the spiritual leadership of the church, overall direction of the church, and the deacons to lead the church in meeting the physical needs of the church. So there's a practical need. There's a practical need for these elders and deacons, because Paul and his church planting team, including Titus, they're going to move on. They're going to keep the mission moving. Without them, the mission stops. The church, you know, in the first century just exploded. There was just some spontaneous expansion that was happening in the early days of the church. And churches were being planted, but these teams, they would not move on without the church at that particular location being established. And that's, I really think that's part of the issue in our church planting movement today. They don't grasp this understanding of God's heart that the church has to be established before moving on. I mean, it's just like, especially in the context of Asia and other places around the world, it's like, let's just quickly plant these churches, and then they're there for a little bit, and there's a lot of turnover. And because their church, they haven't labored, these church planters haven't labored to establish the church there. So who are these leaders? What does their resume look like? What's the hiring process? Well, I think, first of all, Jesus is the ultimate fulfillment of these characteristics. He's above reproach. He is faithful to his bride, the church. He is not arrogant. He's not quick-tempered, drunkard, violent, or greedy. He's a hospitable guy. He was lover of good. He was self-controlled. He is upright. He is holy. He is disciplined. And so, therefore, these leaders, they are what I would say is windows to Jesus. I was driving here this morning, and you know, we were looking right. We have to drive east to get to the church building, and the sun was like blinding on us, and it just showed all the blemishes in my window. It was so dirty, and so I had to do the whole window wipers thing, the spraying of the washer fluid on there, and it cleaned it right up, and I was able to see. Right, I didn't want to focus on the little dots and all the little the bird poop that was on there and all that stuff. I wanted to focus on the road, right? And so that's what these leaders are for. They're a window to be able to see Jesus. Because if everything is cloudy, everything is in front of you, let's clean that off and let's focus right at Jesus. So they don't want to put any stumbling block into getting to him. They want to make him more beautiful. So their resume is not filled with experience, with college degrees. It's not going to be filled with skills. It's not a personality test to see how well they mesh together as a team. It's not how well they lead organizations and how much they've accomplished, but rather, it's how are they reflecting Jesus. This job qualification is filled with characteristics. Can you imagine having a job qualification when it's all about just your character and not anything about your experience, your education qualifications? And that should be every church committee, pastoral search committee, that should be their job qualifications, is their character. That's what's problem, I think, in a lot of churches, and that's why I want to apologize on behalf of the church for bully pastors. If you come from a church background where the pastors or the leaders would use their spiritual authority to abuse you, somehow use that for pride and their own arrogance, to lift up their own name, to lift up their own kingdom, I apologize on behalf of them, and that is not Christ. That is not the way of Jesus at all. And that is not how we here at Crestview want to lead you. We want to lead you humbly on the road to him. So Jesus doesn't care about skill. Why? Because he's going to empower it. The Spirit, his Spirit, will work in the church. It's the Spirit that's going to enact change in the community through the church. So the question is have they, these leaders, have they been transformed by the power of the gospel? Have the leaders been empowered by the Spirit? That's the questions that we're asking about our leaders. Not about their skill, not about their experience, not about their giftings. So does that mean, if it's all about their qualifications, it's all about their character, does that mean they don't do anything? Are they just propped up as statues for us to look at? Hopefully not like the statue of David. That would be really awkward. But hopefully they're not like a statue, right? That's not what they're there for. In verse 9, it says that they are there to give instruction in sound doctrine and rebuke the ones who live contrary. So they have a task, and that's to make disciples. Doesn't that sound familiar? They lead in making disciples. And you're apt to ask, what is sound doctrine, right? Give instruction in sound doctrine. Well, let me burst your bubble. That's not theology. It's not theology. Sound doctrine is the teaching of the life of Christ, the teaching of what does it mean to live as a disciple of Jesus, to pursue after him, not some weird theology and let's get you into some 600-page textbook and get it all into all that. No, that's not what that means. In our Enlightenment age, we like to make it think about it's all about our minds, right? It's all about what we know. But that doesn't do anything if it doesn't affect your life. We want to know him, and we want to live like him. And so it's got to sink down into our hands. It's not about business. The leaders are not about business decisions. It's not about managing money. It's not about anything else but teaching us Jesus. And I hope you're experiencing that here at Crestview. I hope every Sunday is unashamedly about Jesus. The passion of your leaders is that you would drip, that everything we would do on Sundays, everything we would do in our life together would just drip Jesus. So what's the applications for that? Well, you're like, well, I'm not a leader, so what's the application for me? A few of them. Well, listen to them. Listen to your leaders, not in some weird spiritual abuse sort of way, but rather listening to them because they're showing you the way to Jesus. They're pointing you to him. They want you to know him. They want you to center on him. Imitate them. Imitate your leaders. They not only speak Christ, but they're exemplifying Christ. Watch and observe how they live their life, like I did with South Asians. Watch and observe them. Listen how they pray. Look at how they speak to their spouse. Watch how they speak to outsiders. And don't say, well, that's just them. I'll never be like them. That's why they're the leaders, because, you know, they're super holy, different. You know, people say that about international workers that drive me crazy. Like, oh, well, you're just an international worker, so, you know, that's you. Do you realize that we're empowered by the same Spirit? Right, so the same Spirit that's in me, the same Spirit that's in the leaders, is the same Spirit that's in you. Are they not leaning on the same righteousness that you and I are leaning on? Are they not being taught by the same Jesus that we are learning? Yes. So that does empower us. Pray for them. Pray for rest. Pray for strength, pray for empowerment, pray for unity, pray for a spirit of love, pray for mercy, pray for provision, pray for courage, pray for humility, pray for their families, pray for protection from the enemy, pray for blessing for them. And then I would ask you to point them to Jesus. There's a text in 1 Timothy that tells how to confront an elder in sin. Did you know that they sin? Did you know that? Like Phil said last week, they're not the Christ, right? So they need to be pointed to Jesus just like you and I do. So can you do the same thing? Just as they're pointing to Jesus, will you point them to him as well? And then look for others. Look for others. We need a next generation of leaders. We need the next generation of leaders that are willing to stand up and say, yes, this is how we can lead into the next generation, right? This is how we're going to send people. I want to send so many people out from here. And so would you be on the lookout for others who would want to raise and build up the church and center others on Jesus? So we have this first thing, right? So how do we surround ourselves? How do we surround ourselves with those that know Jesus and make him known? Well, one is we look to our leaders. And the second thing is we're going to get rid of what pulls us away from Jesus. We're going to get rid of what pulls us away from him. This is verses 10 through 16. So why do we need leaders like this? Why do they need to teach us? Well, he says because there are many who are the opposite of Jesus. Their characteristics, there in chapter or in verse 10 and what they do in verses 15 and 16 are about the opposite that you can get from the leader's qualifications. And what's the result of who these people in the church, what's the result that they're having? It says in verse 11 that they are upsetting whole families. And I think that's the linchpin of this whole section, that there are these people that are tearing apart, that they're upsetting whole families. And that's a big deal, because we're not talking about just some cantankerous people in the church, because believe me, there's cantankerous people in every church, right? We're not talking about the cantankerous ones. But the people that are there, they're actually wrecking others' faith. And not just one person, but whole families, their faith is wrecked. Not just leaving, okay, well, they just left and they went to the church across the street. No, like, they are leaving the faith because of what's happening by these people. And who are these characters that were causing them to lose their faith? Who are these opposers? Lest you think, I know where your mind is going, right? Your mind is going, oh, it's to the liberal media that's trying to pull our families away. It's the woke agenda that's trying to pull apart our families and upsetting whole families. That's not what Paul says here. It's those that are inside the church. It's those that are inside. It's us. There's people among us. There's ideologies. There's attitudes. There's actions. There's beliefs inside us that can tear us away from Christ, tear whole families away from Christ. So what are we going to get rid of? We have to look inward. I mean, look at the language that's there. It says the insubordinate. That means that there are those that aren't agreeing to what has been taught to them. So there's something that's being taught, and they are disagreeing with what's been taught, and they want to go their own way. They're empty talkers. They don't have lives that back it up. They just talk. And in verse 14, here's another reason why I know that these are insiders, just lest you think that I'm crazy. Verse 14, Paul tells Titus to rebuke them sharply that they may be sound in the faith. He's not talking to outsiders being sound in the faith. He's talking about this, that everybody in the church would be. So rebuke those inside the church so that they would be sound in the faith. So Paul wants Titus to rebuke them. He wants the elders to rebuke them. We need to protect the gospel. So let me do that now. All right. So what is it that pulls us away from Jesus? What is it in our context? What is it in the 21st century Central Kansas Crestview Bible Church, what is it that can wreck the faith of some? A few things. Well, sometimes it could be our actions, our lack of love, genuine love for one another. A lack of genuine love, not just for one another, but a lack of genuine love for our enemy. Because Jesus says, love your enemy, pray for them, do good to them. And people see that. And they read that and they say, "What? I'm looking at the church. They seem to hate their enemies. So maybe Jesus is a liar. Their people aren't actually following and doing what Jesus says." There's a lack of unity. We harbor bitterness toward one another. When we act just like the world, when we act like we haven't been transformed by the power of the gospel, like we aren't a new creation, right? Well, these people aren't doing things my way, so therefore I'm going to be mad at them. And I'm not going to talk to them for a little while. Yeah, it's those people out there that are wrecking the faith. No, it's us when we start acting like that. It's different beliefs about the gospel. You know, like ridiculous things that in the church that people say that if you don't vote a certain way, you aren't a Christian. Have you heard people say that? If you vote this certain way, well, I don't know if a real Christian would vote this way. Are you trying to tell me? Like, look at me straight in the eye and tell me that Jesus' blood is not sufficient enough for you. You have to vote now a certain way, and then you can be a Christian. That is not, that the substitutionary atonement of Jesus is on the same weight and on the same level as how we vote. This is preposterous. How can we equate voting for a certain person or a certain party on the same level of the blood of Jesus? It's the same thing, not just for voting, it's the same thing for end times. It's the same thing for gender roles. It wrecks the faith of some when we start equating other issues, political or whatever issues, to gospel-level issues. It's attitudes, stereotypes about outsiders. Oh, all outsiders, they're all evil. It's not helpful. Concerning world events, like how do we talk about world events? Things that are happening in the world. That these are like the end times. Oh, our country's falling apart. Oh, what are we going to do? Oh, this is just all horrible. Look at this. Or do we see, or do we serve a bigger God than that? Do you not think that that could wreck the faith of some? To see our worry, to see our anxiety, to see our fears about what's happening in the world, and they say, well, I don't know what we're going to do. We better do something about this because I don't know if Jesus is. People will say, well, oh, I guess then Jesus isn't powerful enough. Then maybe I don't want Jesus. Maybe he's not sufficient enough. Maybe it's different false teachings that we could hold on to. You know, the easy false teaching that we can hold on to, you know, that we can grab a hold of is the prosperity gospel. That's the low-hanging fruit right there, the prosperity gospel. We were just, Phil and I were on a trip recently, and we were watching the 700 Club. That's bonkers right there. Many times in South Asia, this is actually what actually wrecks the faith of many people in South Asia, is this, and it's a soft prosperity gospel. Right, you promise them if you come and follow Jesus, he'll give this, he'll do that, he'll bring this healing, he'll bring this prosperity. Your kid will get to go in this type of college and this type of school, and it doesn't happen. You say, "Oh, I guess your Jesus isn't powerful enough." Right, and we have this soft prosperity gospel, right? Because we start to say, "Oh, well, Jesus, if you come to Jesus, he'll do all these things for you," and if that doesn't happen, what's left? We have a legalistic gospel. Adding to the gospel, we trust in Jesus. We have to do some things in order to complete our holiness. We have to abstain from certain things, add certain practices that have the appearance of holiness. We try to add into the gospel. You know, like, don't smoke, don't cuss, and don't run with those who do, right? Says who? Jesus, the friend of sinners? I don't think so. We better make sure we listen to Christian music or whatever. Says who? Don't add to the gospel. This is, I would say this is one of the biggest dangers in wrecking the faith of whole families, is trying to add to the gospel. Just believe. Why do you feel like you need to make your salvation dependent upon more than Jesus, the author of salvation? His sacrifice is enough. His life is enough. He finished and accomplished our salvation completely. He said it is finished. He is sufficient. And then there's the opposite end of a legalistic gospel. There's the hyper-grace gospel. The other extreme where you can do whatever you want and Jesus will forgive me. It's the old country song tune, right? That I can, what is it? 5-card poker on a Friday night and church on a Sunday morning, right? So it's this whole thing where it's like I can do whatever I want and then I'll just come to church and Jesus will forgive everything and then live completely differently Monday through Saturday. And then again, get some kind of like a absolving of my sin by the pastor, and then go back and live how I want again, right? So that would be the opposite end. We want to be relentless in pointing others to Jesus. So all this is just overwhelming, isn't it? There's a lot that tries to pull us away from centering on Jesus, and that's why Paul is urging Titus to structure this way. And this is why we need to press deeper into our life together, which is chapter 2. And then he says something very interesting at the end I want to highlight real quickly. He says this word, to the pure, all things are pure. What does that mean? To the pure, all things are pure. So can you add impure? What happens if you add an impurity into something that's completely pure? something that's completely pure and add one drop of impurity to it, what's going to happen? The whole thing is impure, right? Now, to help illustrate this, what is the thing we all love here? A Kathy Gerst cake, right? Now imagine you have a Kathy Gerst cake and you drop a drop of gasoline in it. The pure Kathy Gerst cake has now been impure because of one drop of gasoline. Now, here Paul flips it though. He says to the pure, he's making everything else pure. One drop of purity purifies the impure. Is that how that works? One drop of Kathy Gerst cake is going to purify a whole tank of gasoline? But somehow that's the rubric that Jesus is thinking through. To the pure, all things are pure. Think of the power behind that. Because we have been purified by the blood of Jesus, all things are pure for us. We don't have to worry about vitamin supplements. We don't have to worry about schooling choices. We don't have to worry about political party affiliation. We don't have to worry about music choices, use of alcohol, movie attendance. We're not bound by any of that. How freeing is that? And all these, what I call these, are modern-day purity laws, have nothing to do with our salvation. It just makes us more arrogant. Oh, look, I'm not doing this. I'm not infected by these impure things. How about you getting into the world and making the world pure? How about you going into the world instead of like making sure that you try to guard your pure soul by the blood of Jesus? I'm going to try to guard that from these impurities that could come in and defile me. How about you have confidence that Paul gives us to step in to those areas, to step into a dangerous, maybe scary, fearful thing and say, you know what? It's okay. I have Jesus. I have the Spirit, the Father, the triune God with me. I'm going to step into these places. And guess what? Jesus does a miracle work through you. So this is the need for leaders who show us Christ. We need those who will center us on Jesus. And so in conclusion, what we need is we don't need some sort of like a holy huddle, right? This isn't just to say, okay, well, to surround ourselves, we just need to come in here, right, and just don't get infected by the world. No. This should propel us outwards. We are centering so that we can be propelled outwards. We can be propelled out into the world, into a lost and dying world, a broken world without true hope, joy, peace, to tell them, to show them that there is a Savior who loved and died for them. So we need our leaders who will push us toward Jesus, who will get rid of all those things that pull us away. Crestview, Jesus is worth centering our lives on. His kingdom is forever. Your kingdom will die. America will die. Your career will come to an end. Your worries, your sufferings are temporary. Jesus reigns and rules forever. He is worth building your life on. He is the only one worth living for, pursuing after, obsessing about. Jesus' love is unconditional, and he is pursuing you. The broken, the hurting, the falling down again and again you. Yes, he's pursuing that you. So will you join him? Even if you've been changed by him for years, will you take a deeper dive into him? Will you surround yourself with these leaders? Will you surround yourself with this community that helps me center on Jesus, takes me just a step closer with him? Look at your leaders and get rid of those who distract us. And let's build our church, everything that we do here, to be about him. Because we want to know Jesus. We want to make him known around the world. We want our community to know his gospel. We want to make it our ambition that the nations know this Jesus.